Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Influential She, our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp, and we're thrilled to be back again today in a part two series where we're talking about connection and the connection that we feel that is so critically important, particularly in this uncertain times where we're all dealing with the coronavirus, but we also know that connection transcends not only when we're in times of uncertainty, but also has been so critically important in all of our lives. You know, I know that this is part two, but in the conversation that we had earlier, you want to talk a little bit about our guests that we're going to be having and talking to again today?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're just so excited to bring back Martha King for episode two. And for all of those who are listening, if you didn't have an opportunity to catch her first episode, just would highly recommend it, even though this episode will stand on its own. But Martha's just an amazing woman that has really leveraged connection to become a woman of influence in her life. And from the remote areas of Wyoming and being a part of having her father be an Episcopal minister and her mother who really gave all kinds of role modeling on how to extend connections to people, no matter, you know, what your race was, your skin color, your religion, your differences. And then being inspired by President Kennedy and working in Korea in the Peace Corps, to then coming back to the United States and really expanding her passion around public health and connection with people and really this worldwide lens of seeing things, and worked for an extensive amount of time with the National Conference of State Legislatures, really lifting up legislators from all around the nation with respect to health policy, and just such an amazing job she did in that, because NCSL is a bipartisan group of people that come together really trying to shape the most effective policy within the United States. And it really requires a team that exemplifies how Martha is as a woman in really having those thoughts and ideas come forward in a way of de-escalating what divides us and really moving forward on what brings us together. And I just had the extraordinary opportunity to get to know Martha King working as a South Dakota state senator. And we are just delighted that she is back for episode two so we can talk about the next part of her life, which is incredible. So welcome back, Martha.
Thank you so much. And again, I remain humbled and excited about this. And I won't go on and talk about how wonderful the two of you are, because by this time, your listeners should know that.
Thank you, Martha.
Isn't she just like the sweetest?
So Martha, you're so gracious. You know, Martha, as we were sharing in the first segment of our conversation with you, it was very evident to me as we were talking between the short period of time that I was texting Deb, and I said, we have got to extend the amount of time that we have with Martha. And that's why we have you here today, because you did not stop with a career that was pretty amazing with the National Conference on State Legislators, you know, after your first stint. But we know that you went on to re-engage with the Peace Corps. And that's where we're going to focus today, is the recent work that you did when you went to Zambia. So can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. It has always kind of been in the back of my mind. One of the Peace Corps mottos is that people use on a t-shirt is, it's the toughest job you'll ever love. Mm. Well, I think it's really true, although love is a very strong word. It's hard. It's kind of hard. I can't say that I loved my experience the first time around, but it certainly was one of the toughest things I ever did, but also one of the most enriching growth experiences. It really was a connection to the larger world. It's a life changer in terms of experiencing more connections out there. So I always kept in the back of my mind, gee, when I retire, maybe I could do it again, because the Peace Corps does like to have seasoned people work for them.
And I like that word, by the way, Martha.
Seasoned. Right.
We can relate.
We can relate to that. That makes me laugh, because actually I'll jump ahead and say, in the Zambian population less than 3% of the Zambian population is over the age of 55.
Yikes.
So I was an anomaly.
Definitely.
Wow. I was very, very, very seasoned. But anyway, I'm kind of a workaholic type A type person. And I was afraid that if I didn't find something to do in retirement, I might never retire. And I kind of wanted to be able to retire, but still kind of give back to the world with our connections, because I really have had a very privileged life. On the other hand, Peace Corps, you know, with its 2-year commitment of working in pretty uncomfortable situations, you know, the squat hole out back or doing your laundry out of a bucket or not having electricity is, you know, a little bit daunting at my seasoned age. Mm-hmm. And then and making that 2-year commitment is kind of a big deal, even at my age. So I found out the Peace Corps has a program called Peace Corps Response. It's a shorter term commitment. It's for, they call it high impact assignments of anywhere from 3 to 12 months. And the program taps mostly former Peace Corps volunteers, either people who have been a volunteer before or who have extensive experience somehow in a developing country. Because what they don't want is people gung-ho retiring and saying, oh, I think I'd like to be placed in Paris or London or, you know, have my nice cushy place where I can contribute. But the Peace Corps Response made it more possible for me to think, oh, this is doable. And I actually went online and found some opportunities. I really wanted to do a health program again. I really have an interest in public health. And also I needed to find a country where English was the language that I would be working in, because, you know, Korea is so far advanced now that they have their own Peace Corps. And I don't have, you know, I had studied some German in high school and college, but, you know, I really needed an English-speaking place, and Zambia is that. So they had a program that was advertised in HIV/AIDS prevention, and that's what interested me.
So, Martha, in this decision that you wanted to give back, and thinking about Zambia and your public health connection, what was the kind of work that you became engaged in?
It was really interesting. It was, I didn't have a picture of it when I read the job description. I thought maybe I would be working. It was called the DREAMS program or DREAMS project. And DREAMS is an initiative under USAID that reaches out and does work with girls and young women in centers that are established. DREAMS stands for empowering girls. DREAMS stands for determined, resilient, empowered, AIDS-free, mentored, and safe. So it's an acronym, DREAMS. And it's alive in 10 different Southern African countries. And here's an astounding figure to start off, is Sub-Saharan Africa has 13% of the world's population. 13% of the population, but 71% of the AIDS cases.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? So I'm proud of the United States' effort to really help with that. It really is a good connection that the U.S. reached out and said, we're a world community here, we can do something. And it was under George W. Bush who established the PEPFAR program. It stands for President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR. And that was in 2003. So since then, Peace Corps has partnered with PEPFAR. My particular role was mostly in working at the invitation of Zambia's Ministry of General Education. So let me back up and let you know there are three primary goals that the Peace Corps has. One is to, at the invitation of a host country government, contribute to a program that that government identifies as needing technical support. The other two goals are very much along this connection line we're talking about. It's the connection between people. So the second goal is to help promote a better understanding of Americans by the host country people. The third is help Americans better understand other people and other countries. So this is, I'm going to count this as one of my contributions to hoping that any listener might better understand something about Zambia. The first thing I want people to understand about Zambia is it's such an amazing country with the nicest people I have ever met. Right. And I've traveled, of course, except for you two. But I have traveled quite a bit, and Zambians are just so nice, and all they lack is some of the opportunities that we have. But anyway, under the Ministry of General Education, I was working in a city north of the capital, a city called Kabwe. It was a city of about 200,000 people, and there had been four different areas of Kabwe that had been identified with high incidence of HIV spread. And it was girls and young women who account for about 75% of those new infections among young people. So there really was a focus on reaching out to girls and young women. So I and the Zambian federal government, their education system is very much federal top down. The government had required all schools to teach comprehensive sexuality education in the schools to reduce HIV infection and reduce the really big teen pregnancy rate. So the teen pregnancy rate was another indication of, I think, just some of the challenges that the country was having, and also indication of the spread of HIV, because people didn't have access to birth control and to knowledge, just knowledge. So I was helping train teachers I was actually facilitating workshops. The actual trainers were Zambians. They were the specialists. It was their curriculum. They had developed it in partnership with the United Nations. And they were the teachers. They were the experts. And I was sponsoring workshops to make this connection happen between the educators and reaching the youth to help them understand better responsibilities and opportunities to grow into healthy young people.
So, Martha, I know I'm really curious, and I'm sure our listeners are too. Tell us about the kind of conditions that you were staying in Zambia. And, you know, what was that like as far as whether it was living conditions, or I think that you shared a great story with us about not always knowing when you were going to have water. So I think those are things that we take so for granted. We turn on the tap and there it is.
Yeah.
So I'd be really, I think they'd love that story. I did.
First, let me tip my hat to the regular two-year volunteers in Zambia. There were about 250 of them, and they were all assigned to rural villages. Mm-hmm. And they were living in sort of what your stereotypical thought about when you go to the Peace Corps. They were living in very sort of camping-like conditions, where they had the squat hole out back and the bucket bath, and cooking their meals on charcoal outside of their little 1 to 2 room sort of hut, in a way. I was in what they referred to as the posh corps. So my response program, we were signed in cities, and we had nice flats where we supposedly had electricity and running water, but we had furniture. I had a gas stove. I had running water when it was working. So we really did. We were the posh corps. And I sort of joke about the electricity and water, but it's a big challenge for Zambia because all of their power is hydroelectric. And of course, their water relies on the rainy season that they have and the rivers. And they have suffered drought for several years, so that the hydroelectric power is really in short supply, so that the country was having to do rolling blackouts. They call it load shedding. But those blackouts started when the dry season started at 4 hours a day, then 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day to 15 hours a day. Wow. For the last few months I was there, where my house had electricity. For the rural volunteers, they didn't expect electricity, so they had some solar setups and so forth. But my life was built around assuming I would have it, because I was working on the computer. I had a printer to do materials for the workshops and so forth. So electricity was important to me. and it might be off from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. And that's my work day. So I found myself, you know, working into the night or having to get up before 6 a.m. to get some work done to make sure that I could get that done. And that same with the water, where the water that came in to my apartment was city water. And every night it was turned off between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. anyway. I'm not sure why. But with the drought, they started rationing the water. And the last 3 or 4 months I was there, we were having water maybe 2 hours a day that came. Our difficulty was we didn't know which 2 hours it would be. So it's kind of a guess. And, you know, so that bucket bath came in handy for me. I always kept a big, big barrel full of water just in case I needed to take that bucket bath. And I was spoiled. I would kind of heat some of that water on my gas stove because the gas stove kept working. But I really did have it a much easier living standard than your typical Peace Corps volunteer.
I think what I found amusing about your story was that there was just a lack of communication about when that was going to happen, which you were initially rather frustrated with. I think we are so spoiled that, you know, the minute if we know that something's going to be out, but we expect to have the notification ahead of time. I mean, obviously you did not.
It really helped me work on my patience. So the water people and the electricity office used to see me coming in. I was very, very nice about it, but I was kind of pushing them to say, now, surely someone here knows when the water will be on and off. And eventually I just quit doing that because I started wearing a t-shirt that said Hakuna Matata, which means, you know, everything will be okay. You don't have to, no worries kind of thing.
I think we all need Hakuna Matata t-shirts point in time.
We all do. We all do. And speak about connections, the fact that all Zambians were in this together really connected them. The fact that all of us are in this together in the U.S. where we are with this pandemic that we are experiencing it helps us, I think, get through it to know we're all in this together. There's nobody who has more advantage than we do. So this, I hope, will bring us together and not tear us apart with, mm-hmm. you know, the competition and the fears that we have and mm-hmm. so forth. But I think it is kind of a rallying cry for all of us to understand our connectedness.
You know, Martha, when you have had all these experiences about, you know, your first time in the Peace Corps and now doing the Peace Corps response work and working with women extensively with their issues, what kinds of reflections have you thought about in just what is the universality of connection between all of us? We know, like right now with this coronavirus pandemic, just because of this doesn't matter who you are, man, woman, you know, child, older, you know, we know there's more vulnerabilities with some people, but it's really proven to us that we're all in it. So what kinds of things have you seen that you just really feel are these universal truths between women in the world that if a woman wants to be influential, she could start to move forward in accelerating, acquiring that skill?
We biologically are nurturers. We give childbirth. And I think that's sort of just ingrained in our genetics is that we nurture. I think that we are more the gatherers. We're more the people who kind of try to bring people together for the common good. I think we have much more in common with our worldwide sisters than we have differences. And I think the biggest difference we have is in the opportunities that are afforded to us. But I think that when you see women in leadership roles, I think our whole communication methods are different, where we tend to be more collaborators than competitors. I think that's just sort of a universal stereotype, but I think it's built on that's what we're ingrained with is this collaboration and sort of the mommy bring people together, protect the kids, protect the family unit, and work together to achieve that. I mean, does that sound silly?
No, it's not silly at all. In fact, you know, one of our high leverage practices is about the bio you, which is just the biology of you. And so, you know, there's actually not only innate patterns and, you know, what women do in the world, but also just the hormonal biology of women is more about collaboration than high testosterone if someone has to win. And so we're actually starting to talk more about that because it's such a beautiful strength of women that we really need to capitalize on and not feel apologetic in any way. We just have to understand how it is that we can be most influential with respect to that in connecting to others.
Yeah, and I think some of that is the what we went back to before is women not having some of the confidence that we need to be. We're often right. We often think about things. We often can bring people together, but I think sometimes we lack the confidence and the voice to make that contribution because sometimes the competition out there just feels too strong and we're unsure of ourselves. But I think when we do feel sure, we should feel empowered to go ahead and speak up because we can contribute good ideas and good energy.
Martha, so, you know, in all the things that we've been talking about over the last few days with your, you know, your work early on in the Peace Corps, coming back, working with NCSL back in Zambia, and, you know, now grounding yourself in where we are at this point in time. And where we talked about how critical connection is. Do you have any, like, really, that you could say, advice? I don't know if you want to call it advice, but some points that you could make for us about how critically important connection is at this point in time?
Yeah, at this point in time, because this pandemic is on our minds, I think this, that it points out how really interconnected we are, both in our communities, our states, but the world, oh my goodness, the world, we should all be in this together. Viruses don't respect borders. And even if one country pulls back and we don't help each other, it's going to affect all of us. Mm-hmm. So I think that it really is a lesson that we should all be concerned about the health and welfare of our world neighbors. You know, and I'm afraid if we start competing again for supplies and who's going to develop the vaccine and make money off of it. I was just listening to a podcast yesterday about how the U.S. and China are both kind of bidding for rights to whatever vaccine comes out, mm-hmm. whereas most of the scientists in the world are trying to share information and work together. So I hope that the greed doesn't get in the way of really helping each other. But I think women play a special role because I think we're natural healers. We're natural connectors. And I think our voices can make a difference in helping calm people and helping bring people together. So we've seen some of the, you know, the resettlement crises we've experienced, such as refugees from Syria and other places. Some of these pale in comparison to the crises that I think we'll face as a human race if we don't all work together, whether it's for, you know, the droughts that are occurring and millions of people could be displaced. But I think that if we can keep contributing to our nurturing spirit and speaking up and seeing ourselves as one world community connected, how connected we are, the better off we'll be.
You know, Martha, if you're thinking about, you know, really trying to help women who are listening to this that want to accelerate their practice of connection, you know, what are some pieces of advice of, you know, how to, and maybe being open-hearted is just a part of you are or you aren't, but I believe it's something you can learn and remove some of these mental model filters that you have that maybe get in the way and tend to lead to some judgment versus trying to become more open-hearted. What kind of advice could you give to women that really want to accelerate their connection and by doing that, accelerate their influence?
Wow, those are good questions. You know, and I hearken back to my early days as a waitress in high school and college summers. I was a waitress in a very small truck stop in southern Wyoming. And to be successful, I needed to connect with all sorts of people, whether it's the truck driver, the oil rig worker, the tourist, the local rancher. But one thing it taught me, I think, was to assume that every person we meet can teach us something. And if we're lucky and open, we can enrich their lives. But from the little guy in Korea who was shining shoes, and in their hierarchical society, other people didn't pay him any mind, but he became my buddy. You know, I learned to go between you know, the lower classes, quote, to the upper classes, quote. Nobody really knew where to place me, but it helped me because it helped me learn, no matter who we are, no matter how different people are from us, we can learn from them. And I point back to that podcast I listened to with you all interviewed Dr. Shirley Vargas, coming again from, where was she, the Bronx or somewhere in New York, and coming to South Dakota. That changed her life. Who would have thought, wow, this sophisticated woman from the Bronx learning from people in South Dakota or Wyoming or Colorado. I think another one is that focusing on what we have in common is much more constructive than focusing on our differences. And this hard lesson and valued lesson comes from my own family of four siblings and dozens of offspring. We have a very wide range of political and religious beliefs, but we haven't let those tear us apart. We're determined to focus on what we have in common rather than what we are differed by. So I think if we could all contribute this way nationally and on an international scale, we'd feel much closer, much less divisiveness. We have so much divisiveness, and I think often driven by the media that sells headlines for bad news. But I think we need to tampen down this divisiveness, especially in a time like now where we have to pull together. And I think another piece of advice I would give is sometimes we're all too eager to prove ourselves, and we don't realize that we'll accomplish more together. I think the two of you talked in your early podcast introducing yourselves about often you feel like you have to prove yourself by going alone. But both of us, all three of us over time have learned that we're stronger together. And when we connect, we're enriched, and we learn more and can contribute more when we're in it together.
And so much more fun.
Exactly.
And it's so much more fun.
You know, you really touched a couple things with me with what you just talked about. Number one, I also waited tables many, many, many years. I always said that was the best experience I could have had in understanding people in general, but also knowing that I really wanted something different for myself. But I think that it really helped me to grow as a young person and gave me some skills for later on in life. Exactly for the reason that you talked about, is that you don't always know where people came from, but also it sure is easy to connect with people that we really like and people that we know, you know, it's easy to do. But I think where we really can grow, you know, in our own souls, and I learned this watching, Deb is a great example of this, and I had to learn it in my own role while I was in the Department of Education, was the importance of working with people who didn't always agree with me on every single issue, but still, you know, I agreed with them. I could still connect with them or understood that they had some of the same end goals as the rest of us do. And when you talked about your own siblings, same thing, Martha. Sunday was there's six siblings. We all got together to celebrate my sister's birthday. Very different in our political views and in many of our views, but we still have this really strong connection with one another that sort of, you know, dissipates whatever disagreements we might have on some of those surface issues. And today those things just don't seem as important as they did at one time.
That's right.
So I think our connections can, you know, they can be surface, but also we know that and a connection does not always mean that we connect with only those individuals who are like us, but it's more important than ever that we get rid of the divisions that we have amongst us for whatever beliefs it is at this point in time.
You know, when I think about politics, and you were talking about this a little bit, Martha, with just the divisiveness and, you know, certainly the arena of politics overall is just about being divisive in a way. But how I always have liked to think about it is it's really a grand conversation about differing values. And if you can put it in that framework and try to connect with people from that platform, you're able to even listen, even when you just strongly, strongly can't agree with whatever that position is. It's like, okay, well, there's a deep-seated value set. And I think sometimes also in connection, it's about understanding what people are afraid of. And having been in the political arena, you know, with constituents and with my colleagues, to say, you know, well, what is it about this that really concerns you? Then you can start to understand the fear that's behind that or the past mental model that it arises from and start to understand something that you never even could have imagined. You could only have made assumptions about. And so I think to accelerate this connection is really about understanding what is the motivation? Where is this coming from? That can help me at least understand, to at least be more respectful on my end. Have you felt that, Martha?
Oh, I like that so much, Deb. I really do. I think it comes down to listening to hear the other person and also realizing that we may well share the same goal, but our values bring us to that goal differently. But if we hear the other and don't just talk past each other, we have a better chance of coming together to realize, yes, we share so much in common. Let's figure out how we work together toward that and still are true to our own values. Sometimes it's hard. Compromise is hard, but I think compromise shouldn't be a dirty word.
Boy, that's so true today. Probably more than ever as we're trying to figure out what is the best way for us to deal with this somewhat social isolation, but also in how we can be responsible in our own ways for dealing with the pandemic. So very true.
You know, Martha, we just had a guest recently that said, you know, my superpower is listening. And I was just like, wow. I mean, we laughed quite a bit about superpower. And Mel told a great story about her granddaughter racing around the house with a cape on, saying, I'm Supergirl. I'm super, you know. But, you know, to really claim listening is a superpower, if we could all do that, wow, I think we could really accelerate our connection with people and our influence around that.
I think you're right. And listening is a skill. And listening to hear the other person, you almost have to parrot the other person to try to really get to what they are saying. And maybe even help them verbalize it more so that we do understand what they mean.
I think so often we're waiting, as we have conversations, that we're waiting to share what we want to say next rather than responding to what's being said. And I know I've been guilty of that throughout the time in which, you know, I worked with in the legislature or, you know, worked within my previous position. And I know it's something I have to work on all the time, is to be a better listener regardless.
I think we're all challenged by it because, of course, we have the answers, right? We know best.
Exactly.
Well,
but
and we're in this,
we keep in mind,
you know, this real verbal soundbite world. And so there's just been a lot of like me, instead of sitting back and saying, how can it be more about you? And then together we figure out something that's really, you know, even better than what we could have done alone.
I've never seen it as true with what we saw. People's initial reaction was to go out and hoard. We jokingly talk about the toilet paper, but it was hoarding in general that we didn't even know how to respond about dealing with this, and that it was really about ourselves rather than thinking about the general good of everybody else and making sure that we were all taking care of one another. So really has been fascinating, I think, it's almost a social experiment, unfortunately, that we're going through every single day.
Yes, and I hope that our voices together can help us all get through it better, because as this goes on longer, people's tempers are going to get shorter. We may see more hoarding. I think it could get bad if we don't make a concerted effort to connect.
Well, Martha, this has been just the most fascinating conversation with you. And you're just such a great example about how, whether you acknowledged it like on the forefront of your mind or it was just inherent in who you were, but that a life spent in powerful connection can really lead to just an interesting, juicy life. And if you just think of all of the people that you know, Martha, and all of the connections that you make easily around the United States and the world, being in Korea and Zambia, and this enthusiasm for that people are interesting, that it is worthwhile connecting, that being respectful matters. You have just exemplified this throughout your whole life. And we just cannot thank you enough for sharing this with the people that listen to Influential She. And really through your stories, just showing a demonstrated life of powerful, influential connections. Thank you so much for being on, Martha.
Thank you. And thank you for inspiring me personally, as I haven't met you and I don't know you, but I just know that I'm hoping that that can happen in the future. But you definitely have been, I know, an inspiration for me, and I know that's going to be true of the many women that we're touching as well.
Thank you so much. It's been my, as I say, my honor and my privilege, and I can't wait to take a road trip, pick up Mel, drive over to Deb's house, and we're going to have a glass of wine.
Oh, yeah, yes, we're do are. It. Or we're going to meet.
And we're going to hug.
We'll meet halfway at Mel's, and we are going to hug.
We're going to hug.
We are going to hug.
I cannot wait.
That is
the
part of the human connection that's just really lacking right now, is all kinds of great hugging. And it's going to be.
It is. We need it, don't we?
We need it. We need it really bad. So we just want to thank everyone. And again, Martha King, for being a guest on two episodes of Influential She and just really sharing her powerful story. And we appreciate everyone that has tuned in to Influential She and another episode where we are trying to accelerate the influence of women in the world. We hope you'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.